Yisroel, let's say, working with the Rambam.
If the Rambam's position is that this is an Issa Rabbana, and his whole understanding of the Issa Kadesha is that one should not have a physical relationship without this prior commitment and everything that comes along with it, and it seems like the commitment is not complete at this point, so why is that only an Issa Rabbana? That should be an Issa D'Oraisa. This is a point that Aryeh raised yesterday. So this is discussed. For example, there's an essay that I'll make reference to more later. Rav Aaron Cutler, a great Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood. Rav Aaron Cutler has a sefer called Osif Kedushei Torah. It's a collection of essays that Rav Aaron Cutler wrote about various things, some letters that he wrote. So he has an essay there about the topic of Pilegesh, where he talks about this in Siman Chaf. And there he suggests that maybe what the Rambam is really focused on is the designation, that the idea of seriousness has to at least mean that the woman is designated for this man only and is not open to a relationship with anybody else in the world. So we know that on a minimal level, Kiddushin affects that. Right? That Kiddushin affects that she's designated to him, to use the language of the Gemara in Kiddushin and Av Beis and Midbeis, that Asura Kula Alma Kehektish. So since at least it affects that, so perhaps that's effective enough, at least as far as this Isser is concerned. Especially if you focus on the Isser of Kedesha. If Kedesha means that, you know, it has, again, the connotation of prostitution or a harlot, if the implication is that she could be open for a relationship with anybody, so then at least the act of designating her specifically only within this relationship, so it does something to mitigate that. It means that at least this is going to be at least in one direction, because min haTorah, a man can have more than one wife, it's for various reasons, mitrabana, we don't do that nowadays, but at least in the direction of the woman to the man, it should be an exclusive relationship, so that already at least mitigates the Isser D'Oraisa of Kedesha. But the sense that it's not a complete accomplishment, that it's not fully, let's what we'll call maybe the Ratzon HaTorah, that the Torah really wants more in terms of what should come before a physical relationship, is a very real one. So even if it's not the case that it's an actual Isser D'Oraisa, but it is a correct perception that the Torah wants us to have more, and that's really what everything else we're going to discuss is going to flow from. And that's where the Issa D'Rabbanan is going to flow from. I had a conversation with somebody this morning about a topic in this morning's Parsha, this week's Parsha, that Parsha Shoftim is also possibly the source for rabbinic authority. That the Torah tells us in this week's Parsha that lo sasum hadavar sheyagidu lecha, that we shouldn't deviate from that which the rabbinic authority instructs. And the Rambam quotes this as the source for the ability of Chazal to make new mitzvos, and that's a little bit debatable, the Ramban disagrees, but the notion of new concepts with Rabbanan is very much a topic of discussion in this week's parsha. So it's worth considering when we talk about the Rabbanans here, especially as far as Ksubas is concerned. I think this is a question that's very worth keeping in mind, or a category that's very worth keeping in mind. Especially, let's say, to compare it to, again, we just mentioned that we were learning Shabbos last year, right? So Shabbos, we have many Surim D'Oraisa, and we have many Surim D'Rabbanan. So what's the relationship of an Issa D'Rabbanan to an Issa D'Oraisa? On some level, it sometimes is a fulfillment of what the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, that siu siag l'Torah, that we should make a safeguard to the Torah, that we want to make sure we don't violate Torah prohibitions. And sometimes it's too easy to do so, so we need an extra safeguard to stop us from doing it. That's actually also a din d'oraisa. This week's parasha might be the source for the authority of Chazal to make the legislation, but the motivation, as far as a safeguard for the Torah, as far as the siag of the Torah, is a pasuk in Achrimos, where the Torah says, "Ushmartim es mishmarti," and the Gemara in Yevamos understands the sum mishmeres and mishmarti, that you should protect the Torah. Mishmeres is actually usually a language of iser, of a prohibition, yishomer. So you shouldn't do an aver, you should make an extra safeguard to keep you even farther away from an aver. So sometimes that's the way an iser drabbanon works. But sometimes it's a little bit different than that. I mean, it could be that that's the case here. And it could be, so for example, if we have an Aveira of Kadesha, like the Rambam understands, that two unmarried people to be in a physical relationship is a lav, so then, okay, so everything that keeps us further from that could be understood in that sense. But there's also a little bit of a different mode of the Drabana. And sometimes the Drabana may also be for a tikkun olam, to make society work better in the terms of halachic values. And also, sometimes it is to give more specific expression to a mitzvah in the Torah. So if the Torah has a certain ideal, and for whatever reason, there's a what appears to be a loophole, let's say, or there's an area in which it's not fully expressed in the real world, so maybe Chazal will come and will say, okay, this should also be included because this more fully realizes what the Torah has commanded. Follow what I'm saying? That it's not necessarily out of concern that you're going to do an Aveira in the lav sense, but if the Torah has a certain vision of something, and maybe there are ways to get around it theoretically, so sometimes you'll have an Issa Drabbanan which will stop up those holes, which will make a more practical picture of the Torah's vision. So it's possible to say, in this whole Masechta, and we'll talk more about this today, let's assume for a moment that Ksuba is Drabbanan, we'll talk about that more in a few minutes. Let's assume, like we just said, that the Issa Arus Laval is Drabbanan. So it could be that those concepts, when we say they're Drabbanan, that they're there in a way to more fully realize what the Torah has in mind when it talks about marriage. So it could be there are certain basics in the Torah as far as what's involved in marriage. And Chazal made the picture go a little bit further, and that the Ksuba might be a reflection of that. So I think it's an important question to keep in mind. It's kind of a cholistic question, as you see anything in this Masechta, really, because it's really a meta question, so to speak, for this whole Masechta. When we talk about an institution, the Rabbanan of Ksuba, how do you understand that? What exactly does that mean? It means it's a siyag, it's a safeguard for something? Or is it a little bit of a different model? It means that the Torah has a certain vision of marriage. It can't be that that's always going to be fulfilled. I'll give you another example for marriage. Let's say, for example, if we assume at least Ashkenazim, there have been a couple of distinctions, but the Cheruv Rabbeinu Gershom, that a man should only marry one woman at a time. Right? So we know, so there's a case where the Torah allows a man to have more than one wife, and Chazal, and the power of a Cheruv, let's say, so we have a different model. So it could be that ideally, and this is how many have argued, that ideally the Torah always wanted one man, one woman, and that's why that's the prevalent model. For example, in Chazal, you very rarely find anybody in the Gemara who ever had more than one wife. And in the Torah, it's also kind of a b'dieved type of structure, so you find it not coming as an ideal model. So perhaps the idea is that there are reasons why it may make sense in terms of being able to support women and the like, that there has to be a possibility of the man having more than one wife. But at the same time, the ideal model is one-to-one, and therefore there are other steps that the rabbis have taken, Chazal and the Rishonim have taken, to bring that model closer into practice. So it could be that essentially Ksuba, in a different sense, but Ksuba is a way of fleshing out the picture and attaching it to some of the practical real-world considerations. So it's worth keeping that in mind as we go through this Masechta. What do we mean when we talk about the involvement of Chazal in this mitzvah, in this Masechta? What exactly does it represent? Hi.
I know you're not saying this, but it sounded almost like the Torah has an unideal situation. For example, the institution of polygamy, and the rabbis are coming and saying, that's not ideal.
You're right, I'm not saying that, so I thank you for the opportunity to make clear what I'm saying. I think that the rabbis are tapping into what the Torah's ideal is, but the Torah in some cases can't necessarily present it as the only option, because there might be realities that don't allow for that to be the only option. So, for example, there could be times in history when the possibility of polygamy has to be there. So, therefore, as an absolute chiyuv, the Torah is saying, okay, so we can't say that there's no possibility of polygamy. But we can still kind of indicate that there is a value to a focused, exclusive type of relationship between a man and a woman. And therefore, to whatever extent that's possible, that's what we want. And Chazal pick up on that and emphasize that when they can. So let's say, for example, to use the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom. So Rabbeinu Gershom was saying, okay, in a context in which this is not what the world overall is doing, so there isn't really any scenario in which there has to be polygamy going on within this society, so therefore that becomes the ideal the Torah is able to express as well. So it's not that they're changing the ideal of the Torah, it's that the Torah very often you find is expressing different levels of what's ideal and what's less ideal, and Chazal are connecting to that and saying, okay, here's how we find those ideals spread out, spelled out even more, expressed even more. So it could be when we talk about Tiksuba and we talk about various differences in terms of Arusa and Nesua, that maybe there's some element of that. Okay, but especially, and I think another reason why it's especially true in Tiksuba, this is also something we're going to talk about today, is because of the ambiguity that's going to be there in terms of what's Daraisa and what's Darabana. It's a very present ambiguity as far as Tiksuba is concerned. It seems to also reflect that there is somewhat of a overlap between what the Torah expects here and the details that Chazal came and formalized, which is another way of saying that that's essentially the type of relationship that we have, where the Torah is basically setting a message for whatever probably practical reasons, not a message that can be conveyed in absolutes for every generation in history, but it's a message which Chazal are connecting to and therefore filling in the details of. Okay. So, with that in mind, so it's an interesting question. So if we say that Kiddushin alone could, at least on a Daraisa level, affect the addressing of the issue of Kadesha, that the Rambam is going to say that it's not Nisar Daraisa to have a physical relationship with the Arusa, it's only Nisar Darabanan. So the mitzvah saseh that he has, when he says that it's a mitzvah to get married, so would you fulfill the mitzvah saseh if you only did Kiddushin without Nisuin? So an interesting question. Some Machronim raised this question. So is he saying that basically all you have to do is there are two parallel things? You have to counter the Isser Kadesha. There's a lav of Kadesha and there's an Asay of marriage. So one takes away the other. So if I neutralize that, do I fulfill the mitzvah or is it that you really have to go further? It's interesting because we talked about the Rush the other day. Right, the Rush says that it's a Hechsher mitzvah to get married for Puravu. So it's normally understood that the Rambam goes further than the Rush, right? The Rush doesn't hold that Kiddushin is a mitzvah, and the Rambam holds it is. But it's interesting, it might be for a different reason, in which case the Rush's model ends up really going further, because the Rush is going to say that the purpose is to have children, so therefore it's a Hechsher mitzvah to get married, and the mitzvah is having children. The Rambam's mitzvah of getting married isn't really going further, it's maybe going in a different direction, saying that the issue of Kiddushin is really directed at not having Kedesha. So it's only for that scenario that you need to have Kedushin, and that if you don't have a desire to be in a physical relationship with anybody, maybe you wouldn't need the mitzvah of Kedushin. Now the Rambam would still acknowledge the mitzvah of Puravu, so that would exist on a separate track, but it could be that the Rambam's mitzvah of Kedushin is really in a different area.
Hi. Does it count
as a different mitzvah? Yeah, can you assume a different mitzvah than Kedushin?
Yeah.
No.
So it could be that there's a love to get married without your sin, mm-hmm. and you fulfill the mitzvah through your sin.
Yes, that is possible. That's basically the question that we're asking here. Yeah. I think that is a possibility. Is it simply that they parallel each other, which you sometimes find? You know, sometimes the Torah has that, and Asay and Alosa say they're completely parallel each other, and sometimes they don't. And they're both possible here, right? It's possible that the Isser Kadesha is only about the physical relationship, not having one outside the context of marriage, and the mitzvah of Kiddushin is going beyond that. It includes more, it includes the Nisuin part as well. It's certainly possible. So with that, so what exactly is Nisuin? Right? So we know that apparently we have two stages. We have the initial Kiddushin, and then we have Nisuin. And what changes with Nisuin? So what's the difference between a Arusa and a Nisuin? So she's an Ish just really from the Kedushin, right? Because she needs to get at that point. So she's designated to this Ish beforehand. So what changes with the Nisuin? Sorry? Well, then, right, it undoes this Isser, right? Which may be a Drabanan.
She can collect the full Kedushin.
Right, so then it sounds like the Ksuba value concept really kicks in. Just parenthetically, you saw this on the Mar Makomos. So we're working off the assumption, like the Rambam maintains, that Ksupa is accompanying Nisuin Davka. There is a machlok which we've shown about this. If you looked on the side of the Rambams, he quotes in the Magen Mishnah, he quotes the Beis Yosef discusses that this is a machlokus rishonim, but we'll work off the Rambam's position here, and there's the general understanding that the ksuba is for the nesuin specifically and not for the kedushin. Okay?
It doesn't seem that it's 100% accurate to say that the nesuin allows bia, because you could, because bia, it would be allowed as long as it's not the base ham.
And it would be allowed deraisa, probably.
Yeah.
Right, so I think that's not the whole answer.
So nesuin
allows the nesuin. And also, in terms of how it's allowed, is a little bit murky. You know, in terms of
why
what we mean, because the Rambam has this language. It's not so clear that he's allowing it. I think that's a little bit murky. It sounds like a b'di'evid language. The Rambam says that via outside via l'shem nesuin would constitute the consequences of nesuin. I don't know if that means that it's mutter. It's a little bit of a murky language in the Rambam. So, but either way, if we're saying that the Isser, the Baal, is only the Rabbanan anyway, so that's not the Iker of what Nisuin accomplishes.
Don't we generally consider Nisuin bringing the woman into your house?
So let's discuss that. So let's discuss that now.
Yeah.
So what exactly, conceptually, is Nisuin? Right? So Nisuin, first of all, the Gemara in a number of places, the Gemara lists changes that happen with Nisuin. So there's a set of three the Gemara mentions often. That has an afkamina liyorsha latama lahafer nidareh, that the husband, part of the consequences of the monetary relationship, so he will inherit her after nisuin. That if she dies and he is a kohen, so he is allowed to take care of her funeral as a relative. And if he wants to be made for neder, so then if he wants to annul a neder that she takes that has an impact on him, so then he now has the exclusive right to do that. So as Akiva is suggesting, that this seems to all fit with a model that the next step here is that he is taking her into his household. That essentially the first step, Kedushin, was the designation. And now she's becoming really a part of his family. Now all of the consequences of being related and being the specific close relationship that is held up by the marriage itself, that all kicks in with Nisuin. Nisuin is the act of doing that. Now, what does that mean as far as Lomdus is concerned? That there is a debate. Does that mean that Nisuin constitutes a kinyan also? Does it mean that it completes the kinyan of Kedushin? Or is it really something else? It's not really a kinyan specifically. It's a little bit jarring when you think about it, that when it comes to Kedushin, so the Mishnah is very clear. The first Mishnah in Kedushin lays out the basics. Here is what Kedushin is. These three things. And when it comes to Nisuin, so the Gemara is far less clear. We don't really have Chazal telling us, here's what Nisuin is. And that's what leads to a big machlokus in the Rishonim, which I didn't give you a specific makoros to look at other than the Rambam, but I can give you more if you want to see it inside. But there are a range of opinions as to what Nisuin is, which is really a little bit striking if you think about it, because out of Yom HaZeh, we don't really have a clear picture of what constitutes Nisuin. We know that by the time our weddings are finished, when we say our wedding with all of the details that we include in our weddings, and by the time the couple has gone home, and you know, by the time they have their first child, we know that Nisuin has taken place. Right? But we don't know exactly at what point it takes place, because there's a whole range of opinions as to what constitutes Nisuin. Right? There probably are at least four or five opinions. What possibilities exist for Nisuin? What's a possibility to constitute Nisuin? So the Rambam seems to say it's Yichud. Right? So that, he also uses the word Chuppah. The word Chuppah doesn't only mean what we call Chuppah. The Gemara uses the word chuppah sometimes interchangeably with nisuin. So yichud equals chuppah, from yichud equals nisuin. But clearly our wedding ceremonies are centered around the chuppah, and that chuppah also could play a role as far as nisuin is concerned, because the chuppah represents the house, represents the bayis. There are some who are makbid, the chassan should own the chuppah in some technical sense, even if it's not an actual sense. Sorry?
Didn't
do that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
there's a million people there.
Sorry?
Like, there's a million people there.
Well, I'm assuming that it needs to be alone. So there's different hagdaris of what chuppah is, you know, accomplished.
So anyone that, who says that serves as some sort of yichud would say that it's okay to
that is yichud, but as his rishos. That if that's his rishos, if he owns the chuppah, so and then he brings the kala in, so then that could be considered hachnasa l'rishus. And the Ramah has it that the whole package of the chuppah with the shavu brachos and the meal is all a part of this household representation. So you have the chuppah itself, you have the broader picture of the chuppah, you have the yichud, as the Rambam's opinion, and there are also those, as Tosfos in Yuma, that the Madekin is the nisuin. Now, what's interesting about that, that would also create a certain quirk. What would that create that's a little bit unexpected? Exactly, that would constitute Nisuin before Kiddushin. Now, was that a possibility? So that was Machlokus Rishonim, as to whether or not there is a concept of reversing the order. It makes sense to us, conceptually, that Kiddushin comes first. That's the designation. And then the suin is bringing her into the household. So that's the next step. So it seems like that really should be the order. So to switch things around seems a little funny. Is it a possibility at all? Was the Nachlokas Arishon? Are
you? Or another Ramah that you just said that it's all like part of his household.
Mm-hmm.
How does Sheir Brachas fit in exactly?
How does what?
Sheir Brachas.
So Sheir Brachas is a mitzvah that Chazal said that you have to have a bracha at the chuppah, a set of brachos, kalav lo bracha. The problem is you have to have, they were misaking that you have to have brachos as part of the
process. I'm saying it doesn't fit in his analogy, right?
Well, it's not, I mean, that's part of what defines it as the, I mean, it's not a part of what's called the household, you mean.
Right,
but it's a part of the process that defines it as that's what's going on.
I'm saying that part is accepted.
I mean, that the average household isn't defined by a bracha. Well, hopefully it is on some level, but not in that sense. Right, understood. So, in any event, so the idea of having the Nisuan before Kiddushin sounds funny. It would seem like a conceptual problem, and as the Nachlokas Rishonim, whether or not it's even possible at all. If it is possible, what we probably mean is that it'll kick in later. That once you then have the Kiddushin and Nisuan come together as one. There is a Taz, a surprising Taz, it's not like there's a Taz in Hilchos Avelos, that says that if you had Kiddushin without Nisuan, that there's a kind of shtickle of marriage there. And if the woman dies, there's a shtickle of avelus for her. A little bit like they're related, a little bit like they're married. It's a hard idea to say that there's really nisuin before kiddushin. And even if the process could happen before, whatever it is, so it's hard to believe that that kicks in by itself before kiddushin. So the fact that we have the badekin beforehand probably also means that we're not really convinced that it is the Nisuan, otherwise we'd probably be more mocked about it. But it's a possibility, so we take it a little more seriously. There are other reasons why we have the Bedekin, you know, the idea that the husband should officially make sure it's the right one, the whole story with Rachel and Leah, and the Gemara says that the husband should see the Kala first. So there are other reasons why we have the Badekin, but once it's also a possibility for Nisuin, okay, so we have it. And there are those who are makbid to have Eidim for Badekin. It's not such a prevalent practice, but it is a practice that exists. You know, we certainly have Eidim for the Chuppah itself. And we have Eidim also for Yichud. So we understand that both of those are strong candidates for the Nisuin, so we understand why we don't have Eidim there. Badekin is a lesser candidate, so Badekin, there are those who are machmir to have Eidim for that as well. There's also a possibility that Nisuin doesn't need Eidim. It's not clear that Nisuin, as we said a minute ago, we're not sure what Nisuin is, whether it's a Kenyan or how exactly to define it, so it's not 100% clear that Nisuin needs Eidim, so it's kind of a double suffix, the idea we should have Eidim for Badekin, puts together two questions. Is the Badekin the Nisuin, and does Nisuin need Eidim? So that's part of why you don't see it so often. Remember, I think the first wedding I went to in college, and the first of my Hebra in YU years, I remember, went to the wedding, and all of a sudden, right before the Badekin, I was with a friend of mine, and Shechter came up behind us and said, the Chassam wanted to be Miyachid Eidim for the Badekin, so maybe the two of you will pay very good attention. So we were in the back of the room and we couldn't get anywhere near the front by the time the Badekin happened. So that couple's not married. But what can you do? They probably are married with the Evid, but no, they're married L'Chachila, very wonderfully married. But you know, it's not really a kapeda that you see too many people have, but the idea, the logic to it is that, first of all, as Rabbi Willig always points out, so the idea of being machmer with more edus is always accomplished as something else, two more kibudin. Right? So if you have more people, you need to put on the list, so you're looking for more things to add. But in addition to that, so it's a chumra, as you said, kind of a double chumra, because you're factoring in two non-definite situations, but that's what it reflects. It reflects the idea that maybe the Badekin, like Tosus and Yunman, Dafi Gimel says this, is that that's what the Nisuin is. Hi.
Is it possible to accomplish Kiyushin and Nisuin at the same time? Yeah, with the same action?
With the same action? Well, there are things in the Gemara, when the Gemara asks if they are, it might be conceptually possible. Practically, it doesn't seem like that's what we're doing nowadays.
Meaning,
they're coming in very close succession, because they're happening maybe at the same time, because he's standing under the chuppah and giving him the ring. So the ring is the kedushin, and if the chuppah is the nesuin, so then they are happening simultaneously.
Meaning, you said that it could be that the nesuin and the kedushin kick in later.
Right.
That's how to understand the bedekin being done.
Right.
Today, would that be at the same time, or they kick in somehow? Conceptually, theoretically, one after the other.
I don't know if it matters so much. Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, we really want to focus on conceptually rather than actually. So again, the concept seems to be one before the other. But you know, that's a very rugged chapter type question. You have to figure out exactly how much of a difference it makes. But,
so why don't we do the Kiddush under a chuppah?
Why not go afterwards? Right, so apparently that doesn't bother us. Apparently having do the Kiddusha there and then have the reality of her being there in his Rishus now constitute the bring her into Rishus. Apparently that doesn't seem to bother us. Now, once upon a time, you know, you're asking week, that's what we do nowadays. Once upon a time, it wasn't that way because they were separated by a year, so then the Kiddusha was done elsewhere. Right, so the Rambam doesn't have that problem either. Right, it's true. So the Eidim for the Yichud, which again we understand because that's a strong candidate, especially is what the Rambam understands, so that's a strong candidate for Nisuin as well. So whatever the actual Kli is, and again it's worth noting the fact that the Gemara doesn't take the pains to spell it out as clearly as it does with Kiddushin, but that constitutes the act, something constitutes the act of Nisuin, and ultimately that completes the household. Ultimately that brings everything together as a full-fledged relationship, physical relationship, monetary relationship, family relationship, everything that comes along, that comes together. And we're assuming, again, with the Rambam's view, we're assuming that Ksuba, that our Masechta, comes together with that specifically. Now, what about Ksuba? So I asked you a few minutes ago to keep in mind what is the significance of viewing Ksuba as a Din D'Rabbanan. What type of a Din D'Rabbanan is it? So first, let's clarify. So is Ksuba a Din D'Rabbanan? So as you saw, I assume by now, this is a machlokas, right? So it's a machlokas on what level? By machlokas by who? By what generation? So it's a machlokas. Well, it's machlokas in the Rambam. Well, maybe because of the Rambam Sefer Mitzvahs and Mishnah Torah. Yes, so I have to talk about that. That's true. Maybe that would constitute more of a stira, I guess, than machlokas. I have to figure that one out. But it's machlokas in the Gemara.
The Stam Gemara or something.
And it's machlokas in the Rishonim also. Even though the prevalent view among the Rishonim is that Ksuba is Drabanan, but there is a view in Rishonim that it's Doraisa. And it reflects the fact that this is a machlokas. Right? So if you saw the Gemara on Daf Yud, there are a number of statements in Chazal where Chazal do give you the clear impression that it's Drabanan. You find language, and give you a few other makoros, also the Gemara and Shabbos, the Gemara and Ravamis, the Gemara and Balakama, the Gemara in a few places where you find the language of Tiknu Chachamim, that the rabbis instituted this. And yet there is another view as well. So the Gemara here, first, it's interesting, in terms of, if you saw this Gemara and Daf Yud, so what exactly is the underlying assumption of this Gemara? So basically, What does our Gemara tell us in Daf Yud in Subis? So first, the Gemara says, "Hear the language that seems like it's the Rabbanan." Right? Yitmar Amar of Nachman Rishmul Mishum Mishum Ralazar Chachamim Tiknu Lehem Lebenos Yisrael Lebsula Masayim Lamana Manim. Chazal instituted this, and Behem Heminuhu Shem Amar Pesach Pasuach Matzasi Neman. That therefore, apparently, as a reflection of the fact that this is Rabbanan, so they credited the default position was this Nemanis to the husband. If the husband says, hold on a second, she's not a Basula, I discover on the wedding night that she's not a Basula, Pesach Pasuach, so we believe him. The monetary cost to her is credited to him. He gets the points for this. So then the Gemara says, well, Imkei Mahu Ilu Chacham Takanasam. So then, all right, so then every husband can just declare this, and there's no ksuba anymore. And we'll get rid of the whole concept.
That's enough to just, the assumption, before we get to the answer, the assumption is that like, any guy that could lie would lie?
So that's a good question, what exactly you want to characterize this assumption as. Not necessarily that any guy who could lie would lie, sounds like a good tongue twister, but that the whole point is protection. So if it's a protection that a dishonest person can get around, then you don't have protection. So not necessarily that everyone will take advantage of this, but to whatever extent a dishonest person can just invoke this principle, so then you no longer have a protection. So to that, the Gemara says, no, we don't think this is really a realistic concern, because chazaka ein adam tarech besuda u'mafsida. That we think that a person is not likely to do this. A person is not likely to come the next day and say, oh, you know what, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, I'm calling the whole thing off, because why do you go through the wedding? So here the Gemara has a language that he's not likely to exert himself, the tareach, in order to have the wedding that he plans on doing the next day. Doesn't mean he necessarily paid for it himself, or he did too much work. What if somebody else paid for it? Okay, that's a discussion we've shown him. What we mean by this, is it specific, is it not so specific? But essentially the Gemara concludes, or the Gemara uses this point, that it's enough, that it's not so likely that a person would say this without it being true. So therefore, the credibility is not stam that will give randomly any guy who wants to claim a credibility, is that there's a big disincentive to take this position. So therefore, that chazaka is enough to make it inherently credible if somebody does say. Hi.
Is there a reason that there would be... I'm asking the wrong way. When you claim this also, is that throughout the whole marriage, so just get rid of ksuba?
So that's a good question also. So what I want to kind of call attention to is that there are a couple of underlying assumptions in this Gemara. The Gemara is not making clear a lot of its premises. And if they'll kind of unpackage some of the expectations here. And it's going to be relevant also to the whole Masechta. First of all, this whole scenario is only that he shows up the next day and says, I want to call this whole thing off. She's not the Basula I thought I was marrying. But what if he doesn't want to do that? What if he decides, oh, okay, I'm disappointed, but I'll stay married. And 20 years later, they get divorced. So now they get divorced, and now she wants the ksuba. And she says, I want my psula ksuba, I want 200. And he says, oh no, I discovered 20 years ago that you're not a psula. So is he credible then? You know, what about this whole concept, that's not a wasted wedding? And so how does that fit in? So that's a question the Gemara doesn't make clear, so it's an important question to try to understand. But also, just as far as the basic underlying mechanics here, so how is the Gemara seeing here a Drabanan versus Daraisa breakdown? And basically, what the Gemara is saying is that because it's Drabanan, that's why he has credibility. Apparently, somehow, if it was Daraisa, he wouldn't have credibility, but because it's Drabanan, that's why Pesach Pasuach. So, what exactly is going on there? So there are a couple of ways to understand how this dynamic works. What's normally the rule if we have a monetary dispute between two people and one person says, you owe me money, and the other person says, I don't owe you money? So normally the rule is, right? So normally the rule is that the person who has the money already gets to hold on to it unless the other party is going to bring proof. So here you could have said that the default should go to the husband for a couple of possible reasons. If you say the whole mitzvah here is derabbanan, So okay, so then let the default go to the husband, because let's say if it's 50-50, his word against hers, so we don't know who's right. It's a direct split, so it's a safek, and you can say, okay, safek derabanan lekula. Okay, so he gets off easy because it's the derabanan. But the truth is that kind of language of safek derabanan and safek deraisa doesn't really seem to be the appropriate language, because is that what we're talking about here? What we're really talking about is a monetary dispute. So normally, if one person demands money from somebody else, so as Aryeh correctly points out, that the rule normally is, and those of you who were here 2 years ago, we learned about Metziah, so this is one of the major themes in the first parak about Metziah, Hamotze Mechaver Olav Aryeh. So that would seem to be independent of Daraisa's Drabbanan. It's not about whether Ksupa's Daraisa's Drabbanan, but if one person is claiming from somebody else something, and the other person denies it, so then the burden of proof is on the one claiming. Now, that's, just to finish that off, that's not 100% the story. There are all kinds of factors that could play with that. So we could assume that maybe that's what's going on here as well, that whatever context there is creates some type of a chazaka that she's probably right, that therefore she doesn't have to bring a raya. And you could come to that conclusion from a couple of different reasons. You could say that whatever reason he had to think he was marrying a psul in the first place, and to write the psul ksuba, is part of a chazaka that gives her more credibility, that it's not stam l'tzimechaver l'haraya. We could also take note of the fact that it's not much of a protection against for Chazal to make the concept of ksuba, and then for it to never apply, because there's always going to be a burden of proof on her. There's got to be something inherent in this process that gives her the benefit of the doubt somehow. Hi.
If we say l'tzimechaver l'haraya, who's, first of all, who's l'tzimechaver? Who's claiming for whom? Because when he's saying that she, this is a null marriage or whatever, or money is less than ksuba, then the money is already hers, it seems. She already has a lien on his property once he writes the ksuba.
So he's being motzi it back from her? He was, that would...
And if it's already hers, then maybe it would stay with her. And not only that...
It's hard to pull that a motzi from her. But I'll grant halfway, I have a mode of mixos to you, that again, in terms of something disrupting the balance here, that's not a straight Motzei Mechel Varaya on her side to him, I think that might be true. I think it's hard to call him Hamotzi from her. But to say that there's something that disrupts the balance so that it's not a straight Motzei Mechel Varaya, her against him, could be.
Yeah, also,
presumably is.
Is the Ksua invalid once he makes a claim like that? Because he had a certain assumption?
Invalid in which direction?
Meaning, is the ksuba canceled out? Does he not owe her anything?
Yeah, well that would be grounds to knock out the whole thing. If it's, he wants divorce the next day, so then that would be grounds to say the whole thing was a mistake. But what are the consequences of the later day? We have to see about that. So, essentially, what seems like is that it's really none of these things. Seems like it's not about a motzei mechaver l'haraya, and it's not about a suffix in the sense of a suffix deraisa, suffix derabanan. And it's just to use Rashi here. So Rashi is not using any of that language in explaining what's going on here. And it seems that essentially, if you want to say that ksuba is deraisa, so it means that there is a strong, clear chiyuv here for the husband to supply this money to his wife, to his ex-wife, and he cannot get out of that with some type of weak ne'amanis that Pesach Pasuach represents. The idea of Pesach Pasuach, we don't know exactly what's the nature of that ne'amanis. Maybe it's based on this idea of Eino Dom Torah Mesuda Umafsida, that somebody who would go through such an effort on the assumption that she was a psula, therefore is believed that he must be telling the truth if he now says that she isn't. So maybe that's what creates this nemanis, but whatever it is, this nemanis is not enough to undo the essential standing chiyuv daraisa to provide this ksuba. That seems to be the assumption of the Gemara. There's really a lot packed into these few lines. We don't know exactly what our underlying assumptions are. But if it's the Rabbanan, so that's basically how Rashi explains it. So if it's the Rabbanan, so the Chazal made the rules. Right? So that's what Rashi says over here. That that if there really was a chiyuv d'oraisa, so then this claim, Pesach Pasuach, without any proof, without any testimony, is not going to get him out of a real chiyuv d'oraisa. Aval ksubasa chacham tiknua, heimamru veheimamru, that since Chazal put this chiyuv in, so they made the rules, not Safik Rabbanah, not Motzi Mechel Varaya, just basically they made the rules. They said, okay, we'll protect her this much, but we'll also recognize his claim under these circumstances. Even though Pesach Pasuach is not a rock solid Ne'amanus, but that's a part of the system that it's Ne'amanus enough that accomplishes our goals in this protection. And because we Chazal are making up the rules, so that's enough for us. So there's a couple of different angles that are at play here. And it seems like essentially, after all is said and done, considering these issues of Mitzvah Mechaveru, of Safek Daraisa, of Safek Darabanan, that it really boils down to that. That essentially, if you're going to say Ksuba Daraisa, that there is this core recognition of a Torah obligation that cannot be easily escaped with this relatively weak claim. And if it's a Darabanan, then Chazal had the latitude to decide more definitively when they think it should apply and when it shouldn't apply. So as we see here, it seems like the common view is that Ksuba is Drabbanan. But then the Gemara reflects, wait, not so pashut, that there is an opinion, and the Gemara takes a few lines going back and forth to express it fully, but that Reb Shimon Gamliel seems to be the one who says that Ksuba is D'oraisa. And then the Gemara redefines it a little bit and ultimately says that any language that's drabanan means it's drabanan for an almana, but at least ksuba for a pesula, the full value ksuba, that's daraisa. So if it's daraisa, so how do you know it? Where does it say in Chumash? So this is what brings us back to Eilon Aharos, right? The third parak, which tells us about the concept of knas. That there is a knas, and in Kiseitse we read about a knas, and in Shmos, by Mefata, as you recall, so the Mother Torah refers back to the knas by the Ma'anes, with the language, Kesef Yishkol Kimohar HaBesulos, that he has to pay a fine like the dowry of Besulos. So essentially, what's the indication there? The Torah is saying that there is such a thing, that there is a dowry of besulos that exists, and if somebody seduces or rapes a besula, he has to pay a knas to represent that. So it sounds like, essentially, that it's just that concept, it's just that kind of tangential acknowledgement that the Torah has, that there is a concept of mohar besulos that indicates that there is a chiyuv d'oraisa of ksuba. Now, what exactly does that mean? And does that mean that the context of onus and mefata is only kind of tangentially relevant because it tells us about this mohar besulos, or is there more to it that we have to wait and see? There might be more to it. But at least this much, at least you know, semi-tangentially it's relevant that it mentions in the context of that, oh, just like the mohar besulos, oh, what? There's a mohar besulos? Apparently, yes. Apparently, there is a dowry that's expected in marrying a besula, so at least that much seems to be a Torah obligation. So let me keep it up first then, Morty.
Do we have any historical idea how
old the institution is? So yes, so it's a good question. So it seems like there was a practice to give a ksuba and a dowry throughout history, certainly in non-Jewish cultures as well, right? The word exists. Yeah, the word exists in other contexts, and also in terms of a pre-modern Torah context. So, for example, put on the Mar Makombos, the Rashi in Vayichi, right, that when Yaakov was wondering, who are these people, his grandchildren, who are they? So who is Ephraim and Manasseh? And when he got all nervous because, as the Chazal tell us, that he lost his Ruach HaKodesh, he wanted to tell them what was going to happen, and it left him. So in that context, you look at Rashi over there, Rashi is quoting Kala Rabasi, that to settle him down, so Yosef showed Yaakov his ksuba. That apparently there was a practice of ksuba by our ancestors before Matan Torah, and there is a practice in the general culture as well of a dowry. This is an English word that wasn't not one of those words that's made up just for translating the Torah. So clearly there is a notion that exists. So what exactly the Gemara means now when it says it's Daraisa, then you have to go a little further. It's opinion that it's Daraisa, so you have to go a little bit further and say, does it mean a specific dowry? Does it mean the concept of a dowry at all? And then what it is all kind of up for grabs. So that's not really clear here. And it's more significant because it's not just one opinion in the Gemara, but it's at least one important opinion in Rishonim as well. Right? Who's that? Rabbeinu Tam. Where? Over here. This Tosfos over here. And Daf Yud Amud Aleph, this first Tosfos, Omer Rav Nachman. So Tosfos says that, yes, this is the opinion of some of the Balei HaTosfos, prominently here Rabbeinu Tam, that we hold that Ksuba is the Raisa, V'kai Malan K'rib Shem Gamliel Mishnah Seinu. And this is opinion of the Ri. Also, the Balei HaTosfos and this Tosfos over here seem to maintain that Ksuba is the Raisa. Now, the question is there a space between them that... is this a radical difference? There are halachic nafkaminas, as we see, between saying ksuba is deraisa and ksuba is derabanan. So this whole sugya was starting off with the assumption that it affects the nemanis of Pesach Basuach. There are other gemaras which hinge on it. The gemaras that talk about how exactly you assess the value. Do you take a more stringent machmir stance, like it's a deraisa in terms of assessing the value? Do you take a more makel stance? Are there ways to reconcile? So there are opinions that the difference is not so great between the two. Their opinions in the later literature. So, for example, Nachal Shiva, he maintains that even the Man D'Amar D'Rabbanan, everyone agrees that there is a Shava Pruta obligation, that there is a concept of some minimal type of Mor Absulus, and it's only the full-blown Ksuba with the specific values that's a Machlokas, whether that's a Daraisa or Drabbanan. Conversely, so you have the Ran in Daf Kuf Yud is where there's a Mishnah, if you got a chance to see, which talks about if you have a Shiloh, what the value of the Ksuba is, how it should be paid. Gemara talks about, the Tosfos here quotes that Mishnah about Kopitika, that if there was a place where the money was more expensive, as funny as that sounds, then in Eretz Yisrael, you had a couple that was married in one place, divorced in the other place, so you use the higher value or lower value. So the higher value would indicate that maybe it's a deraisa. So the Ran over there talks about that. The Ran says that even the mandamar ksuba deraisa, but the shir is not spelled out in the Torah. And the Chassam Sofer has an important comment, which is especially important considering what we mentioned a little while ago, that the Chassam Sofer suggests that really everyone thinks that Ksuba is essentially Daraisa, but that it's in a special category. Anybody learning Daf Yomi nowadays? Okay, so you're learning Mor Katan, right? So this is particularly relevant to Mor Katan. It's going to come up again in the next Masechta in Chagiga. The concept of Masr HaKasav L'Chachamim, that it seems to be that there is kind of an in-between category, that there are certain things which are from the Torah itself, but the details are not spelled out. And that therefore, the Torah set down that this is a din, but left it to Chazal to nail the details down. So I mentioned Daf Yomi because probably the most commonly invoked example is Melechus Chalamoid. You read the first Rashi in Moed Katan that talks about this, the Tosfos in Chagiga talks about this, that Chol HaMoed, it seems like there's an Issa Melacha in HaTorah, but the language of all the Gemaras and Moed Katan that talk about it, it sounds like very Drabbanan kind of language in terms of how the rules are set. So the Rishonim discussed this possibility that Melachas Chol HaMoed is an Issa D'Araisa, but what constitutes Melacha on Chol HaMoed is something Chazal were given the authority to define. Masr HaKasav L'Chachamim. Rav David Cohn from Flappish has a sefer called the Bulyavit, so there he has a whole kuntris. It's a whole section about Masr HaKasav L'Chachamim, and he gets together all the different examples where you find it throughout the Rishonim and the Achronim, all the different times where it's discussed. So the Chassam Sofer thought maybe that's a model here, and it's particularly relevant to what we said before, right, about the whole nature of the Darabanan Daraisa relationship here, that if the Darabanan are fleshing out the Torah's values, so the Torah says, listen, it's got to be a Ksuba, and then Chazal came and qualified what exactly that means practically. Especially because we're talking about values, right? So value is something that, value of money rather, instead of ideals. We're talking about monetary value, so that's something which really would be culturally and socially affected. So it makes sense to say that we're not going to set down the specifics of the Ksuba because there are too many variables that could change from one generation to the next in terms of what it should be. But the notion that there should be a Ksuba, that there should be something, that there should be some type of protection like that, that is from the Torah, and then how Chazal defined it. And that may also mean that we can be makel in the details. It could allow space for both. You know, a lot of these suggestions kind of accommodate a lot of conflicting sources, because it could be that we're dealing with something which is essentially a mixture of Daraisa and Darabanan. It's Daraisa on some core level, but the details are Darabanan, which might mean Safek Wakula in some ways. It might mean that we can be lenient, at least as far as quantifying things, because that part might come from Chazal. I think it was Arya and then Hori.
Does that fit in with how we find Darabanan's certain, like Ksuva Darabanan would be something where it saw something in the Torah as an ideal and tried to fill it in? So yeah. It sees like Ksuva as an ideal, and then, but the Torah doesn't spell it out, or it's easy to get out of it by just giving a pruta, so they filled it in.
Yeah, I think it's very much consistent with that, although it's not the exact same thing, but I think it fit that whole approach very well. But it would be, the way that Masra Kaslacham would be even more than that, though. It would mean that essentially, and this is a little bit more of Machlokas, maybe we'll speak about this a little bit more in the future, but we're going to run out of time to spend too much on it now. But it sounds like Masra Kaslacham really means that that becomes a Daraisa, that it's a Din Daraisa that Chazal were given the authority to define. It comes up in a number of places, like Melech Shalamoed, like you saw. The Korban Asana on the back of the Gemara in the Rush says that that's Psule Lulav, for example, quotes the Chacham Tzvi, that you learn Masechet Sukkah. So you have pages and pages of Psule Lulav and Psule Esrog. So it sounds like these are Daraisas, right? Because you have a mitzvah Daraisa to take a Lulav and Esrog the first day of Sukkot. So these disqualifications, sounds like they're disqualifications min HaTorah, but where does the Torah say this? How do we know this? You could say Alach L'Moshe M'Sinai, but some understand that this is another example of Masur HaKas of L'Chacham. And the Torah says you have to have a Kasher Esrog and Lulav. What does it mean, a Kasher Esrog and Lulav? So Chazal are going to figure it out. But then essentially it would seem like it becomes a Daraisa. So it's a little bit more in practice than Stam saying it's a Darabanan. But Hashkafically, I think it's very much in line with that, that essentially the Torah says here's what it's got to be, but we can't, for whatever reason, specify and legislate it down to the last detail, and Chazal come and say, okay, here's how it plays out, here's what it's going to mean. Is that Moria first?
The point of the Gemara is about Ibai Seema. The Tosos quotes that Arena Time holds like a Rishon Gamliel, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Ibai Seema, does that have even the Chachamim agreeing that it's there, Isa? Ibai Seema, Rabbi Gamliel is only coming at the Seif, Rishon Gamliel is only coming at the Seif, like to talk about the difference. It sounds like maybe from the ratio that the Chachamim would even agree.
But the conclusion is not that way.
Maybe
after the Chesuri Mechzer that it comes out that...
The Chesuri Mechzer, maybe, I thought the Chesuri Mechzer was only filling in the differences between the Ksuba Saman and Ksuba Besula.
But that's from Shimon Gamaliel's opinion. You're saying that maybe he agrees with that.
Maybe everyone agrees that.
He's just coming to add that that's...
Yeah.
He's not coming to argue. Yeah, theoretically it could be read that way. It's true, it's not 100% clear.
I mean, I would assume that Tosus doesn't read like that, because then he would probably have said Zimkina non al-Chachamim instead of Shimon al-Malil.
So it sounds like he's passing in one opinion. Yeah, the Gemara is a little bit ambiguous. I mean, you're right, you probably could read it that way also. But,
and the second thing is, if we're saying that Chazar Chazim v'Chachamim for Ksuba, that we want it to be like appropriate for the context, so that would also, how would that translate into nowadays when we're the money that we would use isn't necessarily like something that would be so, it wouldn't be something that would like make us hesitate from divorcing women as readily as whatever.
Right, it depends a little bit who you are. You know, it depends on what it is. And as we saw during Seder, we're talking about it, there are a couple of ranges of opinion as to what it is. but especially to the extent that the ksuba also includes living expenses. So for the average non-wealthy person, a person who's not beyond the average standard, it might be that it always would, because there are certain other details that come to it. But that's an important question in general, so we'll have to see a little bit more about it. Kiva, you have that?
Defining Masaru Asamin as like a din that the Rabbanan are interpreting, din derisive, Rabbanan are interpreting. So how would that be functionally different from any other din derisive? For instance, like you have Pasuk using Mishpat to say this is a cow, horse, and a cow, you pay this amount of money, is obviously not like free cropping of common.
Right.
Like you're not going to say that like if your cow bores three cows in a row instead of boring each one, or it only gores cows on Monday, then it's your only time in your life. So how is that different?
Yes, that's an important question. It's a little bit of a broader question to get into right now because it'll take us outside of scope. It is a fair Parsha question, like I said, because the Rabbanan is in the Parsha. So maybe we'll give it a few minutes tomorrow also, especially in light of Masar Kasa Tachanim, which I do want to say more about, but not so much to take away from the Ksuba's discussion. So maybe tomorrow, maybe Sunday, we'll find some time to come back to that a little bit because it is a broader Kol Torah Kula kind of question. So for the next few minutes, because there's almost minute for time, we'll back to stick to Ksubas, and then that question, which is a worthwhile question, we'll try to address in a different context a little bit, possibly tomorrow. So, in any event, so it seems like you basically have a machlokas Rishonim in practice, but the Rove Rishonim and Poskim have maintained that Ksuba is Drabanan, but with this Deraisa hint at least. So, there is, as was pointed out a few times, what seems to be like kind of a steerer in the Rambam. Because the Rambam in Mishneh Torah does take the position a couple times, for at least three or four places in Hilchos Ishus, that Ksuba is Drabanan. But in the Sefer HaMitzvos, when he talks about the Issur Kadesha, so he says the mitzvah is to marry with Kedushin and Ksuba. So it sounds like Ksuba is Daraisa, as part of the mitzvah there. So that's a little bit of a tricky point. So how do you deal with that? So the Ramban attacks him on this. The Ramban is Hosagas and Sefer HaMitzvahs, saying, what are you talking about? Ksuba is Rabban. What does it mean that that's part of the mitzvah? So this is an issue that the other Rishonim already called him on. And the later Sfarim, they suggest that Bir Hagra and the Shulchan Aruch and others have this approach that the Rambam is using Ksuba there. We spent yesterday a lot of time on linguistic ambiguities, that is using Ksuba in a different context than we use it when we say Ksuba Drabanan. That it doesn't necessarily mean the shtar that says that you have to pay 200 zuz for psula. It means the whole package of chiyuve ish lishto. And the idea of sher ksuba ona, the Torah does spell out that all of that, that all of the responsibilities, that all comes together with this specific mitzvah. The mitzvah of Kikach Yishlisha, like I said before, I think when Akiva, somebody asked if Nisun is counted as a separate mitzvah, so that's essentially, seems to be his point, that no, that everything comes together with that, that's the completion of this mitzvah of Kiddushin. That still raises some questions. Rav Aaron Kotler, in his essay that we spoke about before, so he discusses this question also, and he points out that when one is Makadesh and Isha, so the expectation is that he will take it to Erison. That's the next stage, even if he doesn't actually ever get around to that, but that is the implication. And that's the topic of the first parak. The first parak talks about a woman who's been in a state of Arusa for a year already, so then that already clicks in that there's an obligation of support at that point, even if he hasn't gone through Nisuin. So essentially, there is a expectation that that's the next step. So what the Rambam's referring to, not necessarily the ksuba that we're talking about in the Rabbanan sense, but all the chiyuvim that come along, so that's all a part of what kiddushin ultimately leads to. So therefore, that's what the Rambam means when he includes this in the mitzvah, that he means that he has to be mekadesher, and that's going to trigger the expectation, even if it's only a Rabbanan. That's what we mentioned before, we were discussing that fact, that the Isser, Arus Labal, might be Drabanan, because from the moment of Kedushin, he has begun the process that will take him down the road to full marital obligation. So that's what he has to do in order to have a heter bia. And midrabanan, he has to actually have nisun in order to have a heter bia. But deraisa, he has to at least start this process that's going to bring everything else. All right?
According to nowadays, according to people who say engagement nowadays, because it's a ring that is so expensive, would be considered.
I'm not sure what you.
Yesterday that.
So expensive. We talked about the question of whether Aidim, whether that would people watching it, would that consider. I remember talking about the expensive ring. But the gift, giving a gift at all is a question. However, if it's Shavapruta, you know, if it's worth anything, then it raises questions of people who are watching, is that an act of Kedushin?
Okay, fine. So, according to who we say it is an act of Kedushin,
mm-hmm.
then would it then, if that engagement is more than a year, would the guy have to support the girlfriend?
Yes, probably according to the Mishnah in the first paragraph. But that would be the least of the problems, because you know, if you got that's a very bad idea basically nowadays, that if you're actually doing something that constitutes halachic erison and then not getting married for another year, that's what we don't do anymore. So your assumption is that when you get engaged, you don't want it to create constitute erison. So that's what we were discussing the other day. How do you make sure? That's what Akiva mentioned. He had the aids of, was given the aids of putting it on the table. You don't want it. That's not what most people do. That you don't want it to look like that. But theoretically, if that happened, that would be the least of your problems. The bigger problem is that you need a get if you're separated at that point. So I just want to. We have to go to Minchah in a second. I want to quickly review what we spoke about. So just to get a sense of what's left. So we'll finish the introduction, and I guess next week. And I'll send the Imam Akomos for tomorrow's Mishnah later. But we have to talk about what the Ksuba is for, and the whole idea of Shlo Yehe Kala Beinei Latzia, Beinav Latzia, and the idea of the Isser to be Mishai without a Ksuba, a very significant issue. What does this mean, this Isser to be together without a Ksuba? That's a very important topic, so we'll get to that, and that'll lead us into our post-introduction phase. So what did we speak about today? We spoke about a little bit the whole concept of Nisuin, that Nisuin brings about. There's three things the Gemara talks about, the Yarshal, Tambala, Hafen, and brings together the basic obligations of marriage, seems to constitute the completion of the household. We discuss the various opinions as to what is Nisuin, is it the Chuppah itself, is it the Yichud, is it the Chuppah with a meal, is it the Badekin, is it any of those things, and how do you deal with having one before the other, having them out of order. We spoke a little bit about all of that, and then we spoke about the question of the machlokas of whether ksuba only comes with an erison or with only comes with nisuin or with erison as well, and then we talked about this major issue of ksuba deraisa. What does it mean? We called attention to the basic question of whether drabanans, how they interact with deraisas, and what type of drabanan the ksuba would be, assuming that it's drabanan. We saw the Gemara. We spent some time talking about what the back and forth of the Gemara is in terms of its assumptions: what's deraisa and what's drabanan, and how does pesach pasulach fit in, but essentially the Gemara's discussion that Ksuba is Drabanan with the opinion that it's Daraisa, and most Rishonim saying it's Drabanan with Rabbeinu Tam saying it's Daraisa, and then we talked about the kind of in-between positions that Daraisa it's a Shavapruta, Drabanan it's more, Daraisa there's no Shira, Daraisa it's a concept, and Masra Chasa of Chachamim is Drabanan. And the basic problem in the Rambam, a few places in Mishneh Torah saying it's Drabanan, but in Sefer HaMitzvahs, including it in the mitzvah of Kedushin to counteract the Yisr of Kadesha, and the suggestion that he's not talking about Ark Suba, he's talking about the Sherek Sosyona, the basic marital obligations, and Ryan Kotler's point about the fact that the Kedushin triggers the Chiyuv Nisuin ultimately, so that's enough to take away the Yisr Daraisa of Kadesha. But even if it's not the whole package, and midrabanan, then we understand again why Chazal prohibited the Arusa. It's the greater completion of that whole story. All right, we wish you a wonderful, fantastic day, and we'll see you tomorrow.
The Rambam, I wouldn't say that the possible answer would be that Suda is talking about is midrabanan, but like that midrabanan, you don't do it.